Welcome to the first lesson in our Claritas U course on abortion. Now, in this first video, you'll get a clear general sense of the topic. It can be a really hard topic to understand. So let's start by defining our terms, which is always a good place to begin. First, what do we mean by abortion? Well, abortion is the direct, intentional killing of an unborn human. Now, each of those words is important. Abortion is direct because it doesn't involve the child dying as the result of an indirect procedure. And it's intentional because that's what both the mother and the doctor intend. That's the goal. The death of the child is the direct intended effect in abortion. But what about fetus? Sometimes pro-choice people use that word while pro-life people typically prefer child or baby. Well, fetus is simply a medical term referring to a particular stage of development among humans. Just a quick biology refresher. Here's how a new person is made. A mother's egg is fertilized by the father's sperm, resulting in a new human organism called a zygote. Now, that rapidly develops over the next couple weeks into an embryo. And then about 8 weeks later, after the major organs and body parts are in place, the embryo moves into the next stage of development and is called a fetus. The medical term is used from that point all the way until birth. So basically, the unborn child is an embryo during the first 8 weeks and then a fetus during the last 32 weeks of pregnancy until birth. Now, when discussing abortion, some pro-abortion people prefer to talk about aborting a fetus because it sounds less troubling than aborting a child or aborting a baby. And that's technically true. That's the medical term. But instead of fetus, you can also use more humanizing terms such as human being, unborn child, or simply the unborn. Those are all interchangeable and all accurate ways to speak about the little human being growing inside of its mother. Let's look at two more terms, pro-life and pro-choice. Now, in general, pro-lifers promote the life of unborn children. They're all about saving them from being killed. Pro-choicers promote the choice of the mother to decide whether to abort her unborn child. Now, this is important. Pro-choicers aren't necessarily pro-abortion. Some are, but it's not fair to smear all of the pro-choicers with that term. They simply think that women should be free to choose whether to have abortions. Now, both of those terms are somewhat loaded, pro-life and pro-choice, and they can mean different things to different people. So when you're talking with someone who identifies as one or the other, don't just assume that you know what they mean. Ask them. Say, okay, just so I'm clear, when you say that you're pro-choice, what do you mean by that? And then ask follow-up questions to further clarify their view. In the next lesson, you're going to learn how to drill down to the most important question at the heart of the debate, but the first key is to understand what the other person believes before trying to change their mind. So now we understand the key terms involved in the abortion debate, but what actually happens in an abortion? What does it involve? Now, I'm not going to go into all the gory details. If you want to find that, you could find it online, and I'd encourage you to read it because it will really galvanize you to fight for these unborn children. But briefly, there are three main types of abortions. First, abortion pills involve the mother taking a drug that kills the unborn child, and this accounts for about 23% of all abortions. These pills basically cause the fetus to detach from the uterine wall, depriving it of blood and nourishment and thus killing it. The method of abortion pills is usually performed during the first 7 to 10 weeks of the pregnancy. The second type of abortion is called suction abortion, and this is by far the most common method. It accounts for about 75% of all abortions. In a suction abortion, the doctor basically inserts a suction tube into the woman's uterus and sucks the unborn child out. Now, it's as awful as it sounds, trust me. The vacuum force is 10 to 20 times stronger than your household vacuum, and the unborn child's tiny, fragile body is violently ripped apart by the force. Finally, about 5 to 10% of abortions are done through a procedure known as D&E, or dilation and evacuation, which basically involves the abortionist sticking a long clamp into the uterus and ripping off the child's arms and legs and other body parts piece by piece. Now, I have to be honest with you, this is one of the most gruesome things that I've ever read about, period. And this procedure alone is enough to make you want to fight to protect the unborn. It's unbelievably distressing. But those are the three main types of abortion: abortion pills, suction abortion, and D&E, or dilation and evacuation. There's a couple of other types, although they're much, much less common, including dilation and extortion, which is also known as partial birth abortion. That involves partly delivering the child feet first, and then while its feet are out, crushing the child's skull while it's still in the birth canal. It's hard to even fathom. Now, why do I share all this with you? Well, first, so we're clear about the facts, it's important that we know exactly what abortion involves. These descriptions aren't meant to scare you or to play on your emotions. They're simply putting reality on display. Second, these descriptions are important because I found that many of my pro-choice friends don't actually understand what abortion involves. And this includes some people who have actually had abortions themselves. Once they learn how gruesome and violent these procedures are, and when they see pictures of what really happens, many of them are forced to rethink their support for abortion. Okay, let's turn now to a few stats, which are a little less gruesome. I know you're probably wondering, how many abortions occur each year? What's the scale? What kind of numbers are we talking about? Well, since the infamous Roe versus Wade decision in 1973, which effectively legalized abortion in America, roughly 1 million abortions have occurred each year in the United States. That's staggering, isn't it? Think about it. That's about 2,800 abortions every single day for the last 45 years. In fact, this statistic always makes me gulp, but about one-third of women by the age of 45 will have had at least one abortion. So if you're walking down the street, look around you, and about one out of every three adult women that you see will have had an abortion. Now, why do women have abortions? Well, by far, the two most common reasons women give for having an abortion are social and economic. According to the Guttmacher Institute, which is Planned Parenthood's former research arm, the two most common explanations are, first, having a baby would dramatically change my life. 74% of women say that. And second, I can't afford a baby right now. 73% of women say that. Now let's look at one final question. What are the current laws about abortion? When is it legal? When is it illegal? Now I know we have Claritas U viewers from all over the world, and every country has different laws pertaining to abortion. But for right now, I'm just going to go over the American laws. The biggest changes to these laws happened in 1973 with Roe versus Wade. Before 1973, abortion was illegal virtually everywhere. But in January 1973, the Supreme Court handed down Roe versus Wade, which divided pregnancy into three 12-week trimesters. And it ruled that during the first two trimesters, states were no longer allowed to outlaw abortion. It was now a legal right to have abortion during those first two trimesters. However, states could at least regulate the procedure in the second trimester to ensure the health of the mother. Roe versus Wade allowed states to ban abortion in the third trimester, or the last 12 weeks of pregnancy, but it did not require it. And it said that if states made third trimester abortions illegal, they still had to allow an exception for abortions that were deemed necessary to protect the mother's health. Now, the problem with this caveat, and this is interesting, is that in a companion case, Doe versus Bolton, the Supreme Court ruled that health included any factor that was physical, emotional, psychological, or related to the woman's age. So basically, any abortion could be deemed necessary to protect the mother's health under this definition. It meant, in effect, that abortion was now legal throughout all three trimesters. Now, many states have since made laws trying to reduce abortion by adding stipulations to Roe versus Wade's ruling. For example, Some states now require minors to notify their parents before they can get an abortion, or it requires them to see an ultrasound, which typically reduces the number of abortions. But the sad fact is that in virtually every state in America, a woman who wants an abortion can get one legally. Now, there's some hope that in the coming months or years, the Supreme Court will reverse the tragic Roe v. Wade decision. Many legal scholars, including pro-choice scholars, believe that the Roe v. Wade decision was badly reasoned, strictly from a legal perspective. Now, that would be great if Roe v. Wade was overturned. However, it would only send authority back to the states. Overturning Roe v. Wade would not instantly make abortion illegal. Each state would still have to then decide whether to restrict abortion and in what way. So reversing Roe v. Wade would be an important step, but even that wouldn't fix everything or change everyone's minds and hearts. To do that, we need to have conversations on the ground with our family and our friends and our coworkers. The abortion culture will only change when people's minds and hearts change, and that's what the rest of this course will help you to do. In the next lesson, we're going to learn the one key question in the abortion debate and how to drive every discussion back to this question. So stay tuned, and I'll see you there.